This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Tuesday, April 23rd, 2013. We're in the last weeks of the legislative session with a flurry of bills being considered. A number deal with gas and oil. KVNF's Marty Derlin spoke with Joe Hannell of the Durango Herald about whether the bills will make it to the governor's desk and whether he'll sign them.
The Democrats are primarily the people in the legislature pushing for tougher restrictions on the gas and oil industry. And what's the governor going to do when some of these bills hit his desk?
I think he has been able to steer several of them in a way that he'll be able to sign them. Some of the bills have gotten grudging consent from the industry and from the Hickenlooper administration. I'm thinking about the bill that raises daily fines. I don't think those fines have been raised since the 1950s. And everybody, even the industry people, say, yeah, they could probably stand to be higher. We want to run our business in such a way that we don't get fined in the first place. So go ahead and raise those. He won't have trouble signing that one. Once it comes to bills that take a little bit more direct aim at the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, there's a new bill out just this week on water sampling and having to prove that you're not polluting the water. Well, the COGCC just adopted a rule on that early this year. This would kind of subvert that and or overrule that, I guess, and make it a stricter rule. Hickenlooper said he's very satisfied with the rule that they did. So this, in my mind, will be the biggest party-splitting issue that we're going to see here in the legislature this year.
On the water sampling.
Yeah, or just oil and gas in general. You have Democrats that look to be ready to pass these bills without Hickenlooper's approval, and that really hasn't happened. There've been a couple other issues up here that had the potential for that. There was a bill to repeal the death penalty, and Hickenlooper made what was interpreted as a veiled threat to veto it to House Democrats, and they decided to just not go ahead with the bill.
They just withdrew it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a firefighter unionization bill that, under a veto threat from Hickenlooper, was really watered down, and now it's possible he might be okay with it. Oil and gas, a couple of these bills, it looks like they might be ready to kind of go to the wall with it on Hickenlooper, or with Hickenlooper, and just kind of daring him to veto the bill.
That was Joe Hannell, who writes for the Durango Herald about state government. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
Continuing with legislative action, the Denver Post reports that proposed legislation would make it illegal to possess, smoke, or grow pot near children or in their homes. Senate Bill 278, which was introduced Thursday and assigned to the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, would create a legal definition of a drug-endangered child in the context of abuse and neglect. Under the proposal, any child whose well-being is endangered by the use, possession, distribution, or manufacture of a controlled substance could be a victim of child abuse or neglect. That definition could include the use and possession of marijuana, which is legal under Colorado law but still considered illegal under the Federal Controlled Substances Act, which the bill cites. Colorado's passage of Amendment 64 in November legalized the use and limited possession of the drug by people 21 and older. It also allows people to grow 6 plants in their homes. The bill will spark a complicated and important conversation, said one of its sponsors, Senator Linda Newell, a Democrat from Littleton. Quoting Newell, "It is really difficult to find that delicate balance between making sure the kids are protected, but at the same time not overstepping and having unintentional consequences for a family who is providing a very safe home. And according to the Denver Post, the final two bills of the Democrats' gun package passed the House Monday morning. One measure involves training for concealed weapons permit holders. The other bans firearms for those convicted of certain domestic violence offenses or those under a restraining order. The training measure will go directly to Governor John Hickenlooper, who has already signed three gun bills into law, while the other has been amended and must go back to the Senate for approval. Of seven gun bills originally introduced by Democrats, who control both the state House and Senate, the training measure is the only one that has received any Republican backing. Senate Bill 195 passed Monday on a 40-24 vote, with three Republicans in the 28-member caucus voting with 37 Democrats for the measure. The House gave initial approval to the measure Friday, despite concerns from some Republicans. House Republicans on Friday put up more of a fight against the domestic violence gun bill, Senate Bill 197, although supporters pointed out federal law already outlaws those convicted of certain domestic violence offenses or under a restraining order from possessing firearms. The bill passed the House 36-27, with one Democrat joining Republicans in opposing the measure. The Senate in March passed the bill on a party-line vote, with all Democrats in favor and all Republicans opposed. As for the other gun bills, two measures, one assigning liability for assault weapons, the other banning concealed carry in campus buildings, were killed by their sponsors. The three bills that Governor Hickenlooper signed into law limit ammunition magazines to 15 rounds, institute universal background checks for the sale and transfer of weapons, and require gun customers to pay for the costs of their background checks. This week is a tough one for many in Colorado's backcountry community. Friends and family are getting used to the idea that five men died in an avalanche near Loveland Pass last weekend. It's the worst event of its kind in Colorado in half a century. Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher has this report.
Adam Schmidt is editor-in-chief at Snowboard Colorado magazine. He was good friends with one of the victims, gypsum resident Joe Timlin. Schmidt got the call Saturday night that Joe was gone, killed in the avalanche.
My first reaction was disbelief. I was hoping it was a terrible joke.
They knew each other through work. Timlin was a snowboard rep and a key organizer for a backcountry event over the weekend. The media sponsor was Schmidt's magazine. And a few days later, Schmidt says the accident has been a powerful lesson.
It's really hit home. And these guys knew what they were doing. They had all the right equipment. With the size of that avalanche, they could have done absolutely everything right. And it still could have turned out the way it did.
Ethan Green is director of the Colorado Avalanche Information Center. The organization reviews avalanche accidents and tries to figure out what caused them. So far, this is what they've got.
There was a group of six backcountry tours, some on skis and some on split boards or snowboards that you hike up as skis and then descend as a snowboard, that left Highway 6 on Loveland Pass and the Sheep Creek. All six were caught in the avalanche and five of them lost their lives.
Green says the accident killed the most people in an avalanche in Colorado since 1962.
And most of the large groups that get caught and killed in avalanches are mountaineering groups. And so it's an unusual accident, both in the number of people caught and killed and also the activity that they were participating in.
The CAIC expects to put out a full review of the accident later today or Wednesday, but even after experts know what made the snow slide on Saturday, Ethan Green says there are bigger questions his organization is grappling with.
We go back and look at our advisories and the information we were putting out, and we were describing this sort of situation. And so how could a group that was well-prepared, knowledgeable, hopefully had looked at the advisory, you know, still get involved in an avalanche like this?
Green says the CAIC may look to other kinds of disasters, like tornadoes or hailstorms, to better warn people about the dangers of being in the backcountry.
Are there ways that we could present it better? You know, are there ways that we could make it easier for people to get digest, apply. These are all things that in the avalanche world we've been wrestling with for a while now, and I think really putting it kind of at the forefront of our public safety efforts.
But Adam Schmidt, when thinking about his good friend Joe Timlin, says making the avalanche forecasts easier to use might not have prevented Saturday's accident.
In all honesty, I don't think it would have made a huge difference. It is an avalanche zone. That's why they have signs everywhere all over the sides of the road of that.
For now, the Colorado Avalanche Information Center does know this. Conditions are still dangerous, including in the Aspen area.
That was Elise Thatcher for Rocky Mountain Community Radio. The Aspen Times reports that Habitat for Humanity Roaring Fork Valley has teamed with a Denver company to recycle and sell latex paint. Habitat's ReStore in Glenwood Springs is collecting latex paint at its warehouse during regular business hours for $4 per gallon and providing it to Denver-based Green Sheen. The three-year-old company processes the paint and turns it into a low-priced reclaimed paint. The ReStore is one of about 20 outlets that sell the paint. Kevin Callahan, founder and owner of Green Sheen, said at least 40% of the paint his company collects was never previously opened. Homeowners often buy too much paint and want to get the leftovers off their hands. All the paint collected by Green Sheen is screened to make sure it didn't freeze, isn't too old, or otherwise doesn't meet the company's criteria. The paint is mixed and processed and, Callahan claims, is as good as what a consumer can buy on the shelves of a hardware or paint store. Green Sheen retails for $12.50 per gallon for colors and $15 for white, about 60% of the cost of the average retail paint. Callahan, a former painting contractor, started the recycling effort after becoming aware of the waste generated by the painting business. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency estimates that 65 million gallons of latex paint ends up in landfills. Callahan said about 73% of the materials turned into landfills across the country on special hazardous waste collection days is latex paint as well. Thus concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.